Very good. Thank you so much, everyone. I am Beth M, a compulsive overeater from Houston, Texas. And I believe I'm sharing my screen
Oh,
and you're
wow.
seeing sort of the
This is
miracle, my miracle that is my before and after, or not after, but before an interim picture. And this was for me, I did a talk a couple about 6 months ago or so, and I kind of just asked my higher power, what really have the keys been to my recovery. And I would have to say that surrender and willingness are two of the biggest keys that I have found in recovery. So I started gaining weight in second grade. That's my second grade picture with the giant collar there. I was a latchkey kid. My mom went back to work when I hit second grade. And so I had a little bit, she was a teacher, so I had a little bit of time before school and a little bit of time after school where no one was in the house, right? And so I found all the sweets in the house. And in fact, our freezer was full of a specific brand of very sweet items. And I would start every morning with at least one or two very frozen, but very delicious to me items. And you guys, the company that I'm referring to, I won't mention the name, but the company that I'm referring to, my first year of abstinence, they actually had this giant shutdown of their factory. Like their profits were so low. And I thought, oh my goodness. Anyways, I'm sure it had nothing to do with me, but I just found it funny. I was one of those people that did sliver, right? A sliver by a sliver by a sliver, and until the whole thing was gone. I never really sat down to an entire item, right? But I would take a little sliver each time. And then at some point, it's gone, and then you got to figure out a way to replace it. So, anyways, I was fully addicted to sugar by the time I was probably third or fourth grade. Had no idea that that was the case. And I lived in, I grew up in Mansfield, Ohio. And so we, up there it was pop. Right. And so we drank a lot of pop in our house or a lot of sweet Kool-Aids, that kind of thing. Right. Anyways, by the time I was in seventh grade, I weighed over 225 pounds, which is the picture on the right. And but that I did not end there. These are pictures in my 30s and early 40s. And I was heavy and I was taking care of my parents who have since both passed. And, I was taking care of everybody except myself. 2013 and 14 was a very accident prone year, right? I could not stay on my feet, basically. So I ended up in a cast and I ended up on in a shoe and a boot. And at one point I literally had both arms in braces and a boot on one leg, and I had one appendage free. And my sister said to me, "Do we need to put you in a nursing home?" And I was like, well, I was really offended. And she said, "Beth, you can't stay on your feet. That has to say something to you." And I that stuck with me for so long, and I just kept thinking to myself, well, what is it telling you, right? Like, it's not telling me anything. So I was over 300 pounds in 2014. My body was screaming for help. My highest weight was in the 320s, and was wearing a size 30 and a 26 at the top. At that point, there was no other choice but to mail order everything. This is in 2019, was the day before my dad passed, and then the little baby, she was born a couple of days after he passed. So it was just sort of the circle of life. And I really never thought I would be able to make it through the passing of my parents. And grief is still there. Right. But because of program, because of fellowship with friends, because of the program, the tools, all the things that I've learned in program, I really have been able to live a fun life since coming into program. In 2016, this was sort of what started my journey. This sweet lady, she had ALS. She was my partner's mom. And she came to live with us. She ended up in a on a ventilator. She couldn't see, but she could still talk and eat, which is a miracle for that disease. Anyways, at the end of it, right, she's gone and passed. She passed in early part of 16. And I literally said, what do I do now? Like, we were her primary caregivers for 9 years. We lived in everything her. And so it was almost like losing a child, truthfully. And so that was the catalyst that put me into therapy, right? Did therapy for about a year, and my therapist sent me to OA. And she texted me one day and said, before you see me again, I want you to have gone to 3 meetings in a week. It's like, what the heck? Anyways, I ended up coming, and what really kept me in the rooms was how it works. Right. She did tell me at the time, because I begged her to let me to go to any other paying way, right? Just not Overeaters Anonymous. I don't know why, but anyways. What I heard in How It Works, which is what we read at the beginning of every meeting, right? The thoroughly followed our path. She told me it was time for me to do the hard work, right? And I really didn't know what that was. But how it works really does lay out what the work is in our recovery, right? And so I kept hearing, am I willing to go to any length to get it? Thought I could find an easier, softer way, but I couldn't. Whoops. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. So that's where the willingness and the surrender come in, right? It was in those words. I still had no idea what they meant, right? At the time, the Oasis Club that I came in as is our club in Houston, and we had the steps and the traditions on the wall and the promises. And I came in and I sat there and I was like, one, yep, got that. Two, got that. Three, got that. Four, I'm a good person, right? And I'm just like in my head checking them off. I'm like, I don't see the hard work, but I kept hearing how it works and thinking, well, surely there's something. Anyhow, my addiction is very much like the game whack-a-mole. I put down food, I picked up, what did I pick up next? Shopping. Put down shopping. I picked up alcohol. I put down alcohol. I picked up computer games. You name it, right? And what I didn't realize at the time was I just didn't want to feel my feelings. That's what I was trying to escape. And but I really had no idea. My therapist for about 3 months, at some point she said, I have not heard you talk about a sponsor. I said, yeah, I wasn't going to get one of those. I thought you could just be my sponsor. She said, yeah, it doesn't work that way. Find a sponsor. And so I did ask somebody. And again, she said, am I ready to do the work? I thought, what the hell's with all this work? Right. And I, of course, said yes, because I'm a people pleaser. And so, but I chose this picture because truthfully, getting a sponsor is what exploded my recovery. I finally saw that the steps are merely like chapter titles, right? For the work that has to be done in order to live those steps. Working with my sponsor, there was so many times when she would ask me to do things. And of course, that's what I was told is do what she says. And it felt truly like she was asking me to jump cliffs. And I couldn't imagine. I believed in a higher power. I certainly understood that, but still, It was a lot she was asking me to do. But what I found usually at the other side of the jump was it was really just a puddle. It felt like a cliff, but it was really just a puddle. My higher power talks to me in like through nature a lot. And one of the coolest analogies he gave me one day, we were a friend and I were walking through a nature preserve here in Houston, and I was just enthralled with the trees and the root system because so many of these trees had the roots exposed. And I thought, how in the world are they still standing there, you know? And then higher power started talking to me about the little feathery roots. Right. And some of the larger roots and just the different sizes and shapes and connections and all of that. And how, you know, multiple trees would be together and their roots would be intertwined, right? They'd be holding on together. And the analogy that I got at that point with regard to program was every time I pick up a phone and make an outreach call, I'm growing a feather root, right? Every time I go to a meeting, I'm growing like one of the medium roots. When I go and I do my step work with my sponsor and I dig deep, or I go and make amends or something like that, those are the even the larger roots, right? And if I stick close enough to my fellows, their roots are going to merge with my roots. And when life hits hard, like losing my dad and losing my mom, the people around me, when I couldn't stand, my fellows held me up and they kept encouraging me to go, kept, you know, just keep on keeping on, you know, because I really felt like emotions were just going to consume me, like they would kill me. And I have since learned that they don't kill me, and I can actually survive them. Whether they be happy, sad, or you know, huge grief or excitement, I didn't want to feel any of them. I have since learned that each one has a different feeling, and I can feel them, and I don't have to eat over them. So now I really love our principles. And so the way I like to kind of look at my life is if I can develop these principles in my life, then I know I'm working my steps, right? It's a lot easier for me to ask myself, am I being honest? Right? In everything. Am I willing to admit that my life is absolutely unmanageable? 100%. Daily remembering that I'm not Superwoman, right? The principle of step two is hope. Am I willing to find a new definition for my higher power? When I came in, I had left a cult, and so and I had some real trauma at that place, and so for a while I had to borrow other people's higher powers until I could no longer be triggered by certain words. Principle step three is faith. Am I willing to interact with a higher power, whatever that is, even if I don't have a good, solid understanding or definition? What I do know is it's not me, right? I need the courage to look at my own part. And I really do think step four should come with a warning label, because they have you do those columns, you know, work it down. And you guys, I had 50 pages of resentments. I was an overachiever. I had no idea what was coming in the fourth column. Oy vey. Anyways, so I had lots to look at. I'm sure my sponsor was probably just laughing, looking at all the pages I had. Anyways, five, integrity, being willing to share with another human being and with meetings and groups all of my craziness. Willingness in step six is for me the flexibility to make changes in how I behave despite what my head wants me to do. So I was a grazer. There are many times during the day here at work that I get up and I'm halfway to the kitchen and I have to remember, wait, that's old behavior, right? Turn back around. It's almost like it's automatic, but I have to turn back around and come back, and it's not lunchtime yet, right? Step seven is humility, recognizing I don't run the show anymore. Higher power does. I don't belong in every little thing. Step eight, for me, the principle of self-discipline, being willing to look at my part, identify where I need to fix things. Step nine, love, honestly admitting and apologizing to another person for where my will has taken over. Step 10, the principle of perseverance. You know, I really wanted to be done in and out of this place in 6 weeks at max. I certainly didn't want to be here for life. And now I can't imagine leaving, right? Step 11, spiritual awareness, constantly checking in with my higher power about my actions. It's not good enough for me to just, say my step prayers in the morning and call it good and go off about my day. It's that conscious contact with my higher power. And then service, getting out of myself and passing on what I've been given. That those things to me are the principles that I really do endeavor to live by. Am I perfect at it? Absolutely not. But these are sort of the this is the pathway. I've talked to my friend a couple times about the making a mistake. And again, another visual that my higher power gave me is, sometimes when I'm walking down the road of my life, I'll veer off the path. And I can only imagine that they're my angels that watch over me or whatever are having to come up with a new way to lay a new road to get me back to the path because off I am on another tangent. And that's not maybe not necessarily where higher power wanted me to be. And so, the beauty of doing service, I actually met thanks, Mikey. I actually met Mikey through our service with PIPO, with World Service. And what a gift service has been for me in my life. I serve at the moment at all levels, whether it be region and World Service. I love doing service because I get to meet so many really cool people and learn from them and get to the place where I get out of myself, right? I remember the first time I did my first outreach call, I kept thinking in my head, why do I have to call people? I don't want to tell somebody I don't know that I don't want to stay out of the cookies or whatever it was. And then I got on the phone and I called somebody and I realized the conversation really went about them. But then the miracle was I wasn't thinking about me. Go figure, right? And so, this program works if I'm willing to work it. If I'm not willing to work it, it's not going to work. And I certainly have days where I don't want to work it. But I can tell you that it was probably about 7 months or so into program, I once it finally clicked, right? I went back to my therapist and I said, "Why did it take you so long to send me there?" He said, "You weren't ready." So I am very grateful for her and for her, continuing to push. I actually have that text back and forth and I save it every once in a while. I'll read through it and think, "Oh my gosh, I was quite a person back then." But anyways, I'm so grateful to be with you all. Thank you, Mikey, for calling me and helping me get on the meeting tonight. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you.